Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
The EU proposes to ban Russian coal, a move that could hasten Europe's scramble for energy supplies. Plus, delays along Beijing's new Silk Road rail network threaten higher trade costs on the high seas.
Ship owners, they're going to have more cargo, which is going to be added to the sharp demand to move cargo, and that could bring up freight rates.
And Chinese service sector activity falls to its lowest level since the start of the pandemic. It's Wednesday, April 6th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The U.S. and EU are set to unveil new sanctions on Russia this week, following allegations from Ukraine of potential war crimes against civilians by Russian forces. Moscow has denied any responsibility for atrocities in territories its army recently occupied in Ukraine. U.S. measures under consideration include tighter restrictions on Russian financial institutions, while measures proposed by the European Commission include a ban on imports of Russian coal and the sanctioning of two daughters of Russian President Vladimir Putin. The proposed coal ban would mark the first time that the EU has agreed to block imports of one of Russia's main energy supplies. WSJ Markets reporter Anna Hertenstein.
Coal prices have already reached record highs this year, and this move could send them even higher if supply gets disrupted. This would be an extension of a key characteristic of this war, which has been concerns about energy supplies. So we've seen the dangers of being reliant on Russia for gas, which has catalyzed higher use of coal as a substitute. We've seen, for example, coal plants being used for longer to avoid using more gas. But the problem now is that Russia is also a major coal supplier to the EU. And there are still some EU countries that consume a lot of coal, including Germany and Poland. So the focus is going to shift to finding other suppliers and other sources of energy.
We'll have more on how the war in Ukraine is affecting countries as they weigh energy security with pledged emissions cuts later in the show. The Biden administration has authorized the immediate drawdown of up to $100 million in additional security assistance to meet Ukraine's need for more anti-armor systems. The Pentagon said the money will go toward providing Ukraine with Javelin anti-tank weapons. Activity in China's services sector in March has fallen at its fastest pace since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, as lockdowns aimed at smothering outbreaks in major cities kept millions at home and pummeled consumer spending. The data add to signs the world's second-largest economy will struggle to meet Beijing's growth goals for the year as authorities wrestle with China's worst COVID-19 outbreak in 2 years. And JetBlue Airways has offered to buy Spirit Airlines in an all-cash deal for roughly $3.6 billion, challenging rival Frontier Airlines in its efforts to buy the ultra-low-cost carrier. Frontier in February had announced a deal to buy Spirit for $2.9 billion in cash and stock. WSJ reporter Allison Sider says a possible tie-up between Spirit and either JetBlue or Frontier could pose a challenge for the big four airlines that dominate the U.S. industry.
Frontier and Spirit had argued that they would be kind of a low-cost discount giant. JetBlue, on the other hand, is also known as a somewhat lower fare carrier, but it's not an ultra discounter the way that Frontier or Spirit are. If one of these deals goes through, an airline that's potentially kind of a greater size that will take on, you know, American and Delta and United and Southwest in a bigger way.
Spirit says its board would evaluate JetBlue's proposal and determine the best course of action. Any merger would need to be approved by regulators. The war in Ukraine is driving countries to secure energy sources to reduce their reliance on Russia. Here with a look at how countries are juggling the competing impulses of maintaining energy security while still moving toward green energy is WSJ reporter Jenny Strasberg, who covers energy and climate for us. Jenny, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So what have been the first short-term responses of countries as the war in Ukraine started affecting their energy security?
It's obviously quite a fast scramble amid sanctions and amid concerns about energy security. countries are trying to lock in supplies of coal, supplies of oil, and natural gas in particular. Also, countries are looking at holding off on shutting down nuclear plants that were planned to be closed. They're saying we've got to make sure that we can ensure our power supply. We cannot shut down something that's reliably providing energy.
And yet, as you write, some countries aren't viewing this current crisis as a reason to reinvest in some of the energy sources of the past and are looking to renewable investments for the future. What actions, signs have we seen to support that view?
There's a lot of that happening. The EU and specific countries like Germany, which is the biggest economy in Europe, have accelerated their renewable energy plans. So I think there's a broad consensus that you can't just shut off the natural gas taps today. You know, you can't stop fossil fuels today and hope that there's going to be energy security. It's just not possible. But people, including Larry Fink, the chairman and chief executive of BlackRock, in his annual letter, he said that he believes what's happening in Ukraine will accelerate the shift toward greener sources of energy in many parts of the world.
Is it possible for countries to actually balance these competing demands for both cheap and green energy? Or is the combination of geopolitical stress and rising inflation likely to make these supposedly short-term fossil fuel investments become perhaps permanent ones?
So there has been a lot of concern voiced by environmental groups and a lot of global leaders that this cannot be seen as an invitation to go deeper into fossil fuel investment. But as a senior executive of BP told me, it's got to be a twin track. It's got to be the short-term energy security along with the long-term renewables promises and fulfillment of those promises. You cannot choose one or the other.
That was WSJ reporter Jenny Strasberg joining us from London. Jenny, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, Beijing's plans to ship many of its products via a 7,500-mile rail link to Europe, much of it through Russia, have hit a snag. How could that disrupt the flow of global trade and China's broader infrastructure ambitions? We'll have that story after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
A key thoroughfare in China's sprawling Belt and Road Initiative trade network has ground to a halt. According to freight forwarders, Beijing's Silk Road rail corridor, built to move cargo between China and Europe, largely via Russia, has all but frozen. And as WSJ senior reporter Kostas Paris says, the war in Ukraine could lead to further disruptions to China's ambitious plans to get its products into markets around the world. And Kostas joins us now from New York. Kostas, thank you for being with us.
Sure thing. Good morning.
All right. So tell us about this railroad corridor that you've been reporting on and what is occurring or not occurring on it presently.
Well, it's a 7,500-mile corridor that starts from mainland China and through rail passes through Russia. And then those trains reach Poland and they pass through Europe. Now, because of the sanctions, these trains are not operating, or very few are operating at the time. And this is quite important because it is part of the Belt and Road Initiative that the Chinese president, President Xi, had some time ago. It was his own ambition, his personal ambition. To put this into perspective, about 10% of all Chinese exports to Europe use those trains. The other 90% use ships.
I've got to ask, so why would Beijing prioritize such a lengthy route in the first place? What kinds of exports would this actually be serving?
It's actually not that lengthy compared to the sea sailings. The sea sailings could take up to 3 months. Actually, they do use these corridors, the rail corridor, through the Russian landmass, to send products like high-technology products, chips, transistors, car parts, that need to be rushed. And the main market for that is Germany. So it's actually a faster way to send Chinese exports to Europe by rail rather than sea.
And we should point out, China has not been sanctioned as a result of any of its decisions pertaining to Russia's war in Ukraine. So why then are its cargo operations suffering here as a result?
The reason for that is that because most freight forwarders and most cargo operators, because of the war in Ukraine, have pulled out of Russia. So you need people to move those products. You need truck drivers. It's a logistical process in the supply chain that needs to be followed. And with most freight forwarders moving out of Russia, even closing down their offices there, this has become more difficult. Another reason for that is that one of the main rail crossings is in Belarus, which is an ally of Russia, as we all know. And investments that had been done in a logistical park there, which cost about $2 billion, and it's still being developed, German investors are being withdrawn. So you see that the link is being disrupted.
And Kostas, what are the economic costs that this delay could have on the overall sort of profitability of this global trade network?
There's no exact economic cost which can be calculated right now, but I can tell you that moving a container from China to Russia using a train will cost about $1,000, $1,000 per container. Right now, the price to send the same box from Asia to Europe, if it's moved by sea, is about $14,000, $15,000. So there's going to be an impact on the shippers, on the cargo owners, right? They will have to pay more for their cargo to be moved. And it's also going to be slower.
And just stepping back, how much of a blow is this current setback we're witnessing to Beijing's broader ambitions?
It is certainly a blow and an embarrassment for Beijing. And the reason is that they see an ally, which is Russia, right, that is blocking their products moving to a major market because of the situation in Ukraine. Now, I don't want to go into politics, but we all know that China has not outright condemned the Russian invasion, which means that it gives Beijing kind of a bad name in Europe. And if there are ways to send signals from Europe that your exports are going to be affected because of this, well, Europe is sending that signal. And to make it a little bit of a bigger perspective, right, the Belt and Road Initiative, it's a deal with 140 countries around the world. And the trade with those countries in 2021 was $1.8 trillion. That's 25% more than the year before, than 2020. So you see that this initiative and the investments in this initiative are moving ahead. Any setback is an embarrassment and a problem.
And finally, Kostas, is there anyone who's going to be benefiting primarily from all of this in more concrete terms?
In more concrete terms, there's going to be the ship owners. They're going to have more cargo, which is going to be added to the sharp demand to move cargo, right? And that could bring up freight rates in the Asia to Europe journey with ships. So the winners, if they are winners here, are going to be the shipping companies. The losers are going to be the cargo owners.
That was WSJ senior reporter Kostas Paris joining us today from New York. Kostas, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, one category of goods that is reaching markets is luxury fruits. They're the edible stars of a viral trend that's led some people to pay $6 for an Oishi strawberry or $50 for a Pink Glow pineapple. Wall Street Journal contributor Alina Dizek explains the growth of this new world of fancy fruits.
There's always been brands of fruit, but I think with social media, they're becoming more exclusive and it's easier to brand them as something special. Once you kind of round it out with all kinds of online components and viral videos, it takes on a life of its own.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.